Hi everyone. I just want to give a little shout out that Business Barn Raising is now open for the year. This time around, we are really focusing on helping people who have been interested in incorporating hypnotherapy into their practice get started. And the most important things to get started really are focusing on your practice location, getting all the systems in place that you are going to need to provide services. Those are things like insurance and contracts. And finally, finding the clients that you need to run your practice. And in Business Barn Raising, we cover all of these areas, both in lesson content format as well as supported coaching calls. So if you think this is something that might be helpful to you, be sure to reach out and get signed up. We will be starting in June.
Hi, welcome to Animals and Aquatics OT. I'm Ryan.
And I'm Gina.
And today we are doing a bit of a co-host podcast for the first time in a little while.
We like to go ahead and do our co-host episodes whenever we can. And this day we are going to touch on some of our professional roles in our business as OT and OTA. And then kind of break that down for you, what that might look like in the personal side of things when you work with your husband or you work with your wife, and how that kind of all plays out in the day-to-day, because we know that there may be some curiosity there between professional roles and, you know, fulfilling the role of the OTR or the OTA, and then the personal side of things of just working together and how we make it all work when we are incorporating our unique practice settings and our unique skill sets into our business. So we're excited to get started with this topic today, and we'd love to hear from you in your experiences in working either with family members or working closely with OTR and OTA settings. So let's kick it off with the professional side of things.
Yeah, so CODAs are typically regarded as the interventionists, right? Then the academic entry point, you look at OTRs as being responsible for the evaluations and the treatment plan, as well as discharge. It's not to say that...
Yeah, we get all the boring administrative stuff.
On top of being interventionists yourselves, don't sell yourself short. But bottom line is I get all of the fun and not as much as of the pain. But paperwork is my favorite pastime activity.
We'll get to that in the personal section. But professionally, our roles as OTR and OTA work really well together in our business. And we found some really good ways of putting those two roles to work for us. And the first one I think we can touch on is the evaluation process.
So we do a lot of evaluations in-home. Typically, when a family reaches out to us, we try to deconflict with our schedule and set a day and a time to actually go to their home and meet with them, discuss some of their concerns. And one of the reasons that we really like doing this is that it gives us an authentic view of the child in a comfortable setting, and how we can see their occupational performance day to day in the home. And that's very valuable for helping us to guide the treatment plan.
Yeah, I think it gives us a chance to see the natural environment. It gets us a chance to see family relationships or sibling relations. And we found that when we are able to go together, we have a unique opportunity to go ahead and one person can start working with the parents. And if we have assessment data, then my role as the OTR would be to be going over the assessment data and scoring results with the parents. So we're already coming in with a little bit of information, and then we're putting that together with our clinical reasoning. So while I might be going through that assessment data, I'm going to allow Ryan to have time to be building rapport and starting to take his clinical observations of the child.
Building rapport and clinical observations is not as much fun sounding as leading a stuffed animal parade through a client's house. Yeah, it's being in the home and seeing the type of toys that the kid usually likes to play with and finding a bit about them and asking questions and getting them to just play in the space that they normally play in. It's a great opportunity to find out what makes the kiddo tick. And that can certainly give some insight into planning. When we're planning our sessions in the future, I can draw on that and help determine what some of the motivations are.
So as we're coming into the home and, you know, we're introducing ourselves, this gives us an opportunity to really also build some rapport with the family. So they get to know both of us right off the bat. And one thing that I found in different settings that I've worked in is whoever meets the family first often is the person that they kind of bond with. And so when I was in a role as director of therapy services, I did a lot of intake screenings with clients. And when it was time to assign them to their provider in the clinic, a lot of times that was a little bit more difficult for the family to make that transition. So we've taken that knowledge and that experience that I've had, and we really do prioritize going out to do evaluations together. Not only is it nice to be able to do that divide and conquer with one person interviewing the parents and providing information about OT services while the other person is playing with the child, getting clinical observations and seeing what the environment is like, but it also allows the family to meet both of us on equal footing right from the beginning.
Yeah, that gives versatility to our scheduling later on down the line as well. Like if there's a kid that works particularly well with either one of us, it gives us a little bit of additional flexibility.
Yeah, and I think that kind of first impression is really huge. And so it gives us a chance to come present a united front, talk about our philosophy. It's always nice having that backup person. If the child's a little bit slow to warm up to one of us, they'll often, the other person will have a little bit of a different take or a little bit of a different style. We have found that some of the clients are drawn really quickly to Ryan, and sometimes they're maybe a little bit slower. And if I have a little bit of a different tempo, maybe they come to me first, or I might present a different activity. And also because we are in the home, sometimes we have siblings that are engaging in games and everything during this evaluation process. And also having two of us there allows us, if we need to redirect a sibling, there's somebody else there to do that. So through that evaluation process, we really work really closely in that face-to-face meeting. And our process is really to gather some clinical assessment data through something like the sensory profile or the Brown's executive function scales prior to meeting the child from the family, and then look at that clinical data and decide what type of activity do we want to bring based on what we're seeing in that profile. Then once we get there, we're going to, you know, introduce ourselves, take a little while. Most of the clients that we see, the children take a little bit of time to kind of warm up to us. And I always want to ask the family, do they know why we're here? Do they know who we are? Do they know why we're here? So if we need to tell them a little bit about who we are or why we're here. And then as the child warms up to us, then that gives us that opportunity then to split out with one person talking to the parent and gathering information and the other person looking at the child. And it also helps keep us, I think, both on time because we have someone else to...
Yeah, I mean, the extra set of eyes, and I may notice something that you don't, and likewise. And sometimes that's just a matter of physically where we are in the room and, hey, did you see this or did you see that? Other times it's perspective. Other times we just pick up on different things. And having two sets of eyes in an evaluation, I think, is invaluable.
So as we wrap up with the family, then obviously we're getting back in the car together. And even if we're going from one evaluation to another or to another treatment session, we now have this great opportunity to start discussing, like, right there where it's fresh in our minds. What did you see? What did I see? Did you hear the parents say this or that? All right, what are we thinking as far as a plan of care? What types of interventions might be most appropriate? Do you think we would see this person incorporating hypotherapy? Do you think aquatic therapy might be a good match? No, maybe nature-based would be a good fit. And so we can hash it out right then and there. And that gives us a great opportunity to provide feedback to the family pretty quickly as I'm, yay, go OTR, writing up the formal evaluation. So that does fall to me. Then I'm going to, you know, come home and take all of that information, synthesize it, write it up into a formal evaluation. And if Ryan is going to be the direct service treatment provider, then him and I will discuss what those goals are going to be, making sure that we both feel those goals are realistic and deliverable. And then we'll send that to the parent for them to review before we finalize it.
Yeah, and I think if we get a sense of what some of the goals may be while we're on site at the evaluation, we can even bring them up there with the parent. You know, I think that's the other benefit of having two of us and doing it in the home, because we have access to really discuss with, not just through observation, but also through discussion with the parents, what their concerns and things that they're noticing, right? Because I don't know, I mean, even in just normal sessions, you'll get the reason that they came in for services was social anxiety, but the kid comes in and is bubbly and happy and engaging, and you're just not seeing what the primary complaints are. And it's important to get that feedback, I think.
Yeah, and our evaluation process is definitely working well for us right now. It gives us both an opportunity to take our role as OTR and OTA and put them to use and really provide a comprehensive evaluation that really is very holistic. We get to see, you know, parents' point of view, the child's point of view, the natural environment, and then pull that together with some standardized data. And we feel that does provide a really comprehensive assessment and highlights what we can do when we work together as a team. Now, as we move from the evaluation into the treatment phase, depending on what we've determined might be the best fit for this client, whether it's going to be Ryan's client or my client, or like a lot of our families, they may work with one of us for a period of time and then transition to a different setting within our private practice. So, you know, they might work with me for a couple of months and then transition to work with Ryan for a couple of months. And again, because we're husband and wife, we live together, it's our business together, that transition is really smooth because we're already used to discussing goals and going over what that client's plan of care is. Did anything need to be changed? So once we start to see the client, in the case if Ryan is the treatment provider as the OTA, then he's providing the sessions and documenting. And when it comes to reviewing documentation, signing off on notes.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I was a little lost in thought. But clients that we have that have received OT services or are currently receiving OT services, one of the first things that I think of, especially if they've been a long-term client with the other OT, is I'd love to reach out to them and find out what strategies are working. What can I do to reinforce those strategies? And collaboration, because at the end of the day, it's all about a straight line to helping the kid. And the great thing about us working together is that I have access to another therapist, right? Pretty much anytime I need it. And OTRs are one of the roles is as a mentor, and you've definitely been that for me when I need it. And I know occasionally I'll suggest an idea that maybe is something that you hadn't thought of, or brought a fresh set of eyes. So I know it is reciprocal, but it's great to not have to craft an email and, you know, to somebody that I don't know, when instead I can just turn to you and explain, like, hey, I'm seeing this. I think it could be X, Y, or Z. What do you think? and to just have that immediate feedback from your experience.
Yeah, and the more we know the clients together, whether that is right from that evaluation process or through the treatment process and supervision visits, it's really nice because we basically, our families are getting two therapists for one, mm-hmm. because we are coming back, I'm discussing my clients with Ryan as well to say like, oh, you've seen Johnny before and hey, what do you think about this activity? Or this is what Johnny's doing now. Do you remember when this was a really big challenge? And so it gives us some perspective too, when they're moving and changing from one setting to another, to look at progress as well. And so I just want to circle back around to kind of the nuts and bolts of the documentation piece and how we're handling that.
Yeah, I was trying to avoid documentation. We use an electronic medical record. And so after we do the, I'm not sure, what do you want me to exactly talk about? So you're physically signing the notes when I'm done writing it. So we have a sliding scale system where the performance of our client was in terms of each goal and meets expectations, met goal as expected. And so there's a baseline, and then depending on what we're observing or how they did during the session, we'll adjust that and then basically write the level of assistance they needed, how they performed in that goal. And then towards the bottom, there's basically a signature block where Gina will review my note, and then she will actually sign with a stylus that she wrote.
Yeah, so the nice thing about that opportunity is whether he's writing his notes and, you know, at the end of the day, and he's like, oh, this is what I saw, this is the way I'm wording it, I'd be like, oh yeah, that sounds good, or maybe you want to add this in. And then when it comes to reviewing it, we've already kind of discussed it. I can look over, make sure it accurately describes what he described as far as the treatment session, and go ahead and sign off on that. And it's like that next layer in the cake or the next layer in the lasagna as far as the going through that working together process from his technical skills and then me looking over it and reviewing it. And that opportunity to do it right then and there and not have to come back when, again, in other clinical settings, working with other CODAs and being like, oh, are you done with your notes? Okay, I got to check through the system to see which notes that you've completed, but I don't know which notes you've completed.
I can just kind of come over to you and say, hey, here's the note. Can you look at it and sign it, please? I'm just over here chuckling a little bit to myself because I think one of the other benefits with this is that when it comes to note writing, I know, and I'm positive I'm not alone in this, but as a newer practitioner, I tend to be very verbose with my notes. I tend to document everything. And I think part of that is, for example, if something worked or there was some type of response that might be linked to, let's say, like a sensory challenge, I want to know that in the future. I want to remember that. And I want to remember what happened so that I can carry that lesson over. And so I think I have this kind of internal fear of like, if I don't document it, I'm going to forget and I'm not going to apply that lesson learned into future sessions. But having access to your notes and seeing, as we're discussing clients, being able to see the way that you document has definitely helped me to really streamline that. Okay, what happened? What is the main kind of meat and potatoes of this goal for the session? Like, it doesn't have to be a 5-sentence paragraph. It can be 2 sentences. It can be 1 sentence. But just the crux of how the child performed in the context of that goal for the day.
Yeah, we've really learned a lot about documentation over the course of time, particularly in unique settings where you're incorporating animals or aquatics, and what auditability is. So if you were to be audited by a third-party payer, we are private pay. We are not in network with any insurance companies, but we do provide super bills when requested, so we need to maintain auditable documentation. And through learning that process, we've really seen that the focus is on the goals, right? The outcome. And so that's one of the reasons why we use the goal attainment scaling system that Ryan was talking about. And so as a clinician, it helps me be very focused on the goals and the outcomes we're trying to achieve. Because when I solely did SOAP notes, although I did reflect on the goals, particularly in my O or objective statements, they weren't as forefront in my mind. Whereas when I'm doing goal attainment scaling as my primary form of clinical or medical documentation, it really, you know exactly like what you're working on every single day because you're going to document on it. Whereas with the SOAP note format, you're telling a story about your treatment session, but it wasn't as tied to goals. And I think it was a little bit easier to get off in the weeds about how the session went and maybe the clinical reasoning behind that rather than just strictly tying it to the goals. So we do that, but then we also provide a parent communication log every week that goes to the families. So we have both a clinical documentation piece and then like a parent-friendly feedback form that we're providing every week. So, you know, from the clinical side of things, yeah, Ryan does his documentation, I sign off on it, and that way that process can run pretty smoothly because we're sort of doing it in real time. Often he's documenting right after sessions and then I'm going to go ahead and sign off on that. So we're done with that. And those sort of compliance things that come up when it's an OTR and an OTA working together, whether that's in a clinic or a private practice like we are, those are all things that you really have to be aware of. And whatever your state guidelines are for OTR and OTA practice.
Yeah. Sorry, I was just thinking of another benefit of, as I said, I can be verbose with my note writing. It's nothing more frustrating than when something happens during a session that I feel like is really important, but it doesn't apply to any of the goals. You know, where they make progress in something, but it's related to any of their goal. And living with you and sitting next to you on the couch while I'm writing my goals, or writing my notes rather, you've helped me numerous times to translate those observations that I've had into how they may apply to the goals in maybe a way that I hadn't considered before. But then also you mentioned the parent communication log, and those can be a really good place for us to acknowledge things that happened during the session that were victories, they were successes, but they just may not relate to the goals. And so they're not necessarily appropriate to document in their EMR.
Yeah, I think that's one of the good things. I think there's a lot of good things, and I think our families get a lot of benefits over the parent communication log. And they actually take me longer to fill out than my clinical notes do. Because I'm thinking about, okay, how do I write it in parent-friendly terms? How do I take my clinical observations and translate it into something that's useful? And I think we've both been working really hard on giving the family one thing to focus on or answer each week, because it's very easy to give five suggestions for something and know that they're never going to implement them and they're never going to give me feedback. But if I give just one thing in my parent communication log, then the next week I can not give any suggestions, but ask a question.
Yeah.
Did you do it and how did it work out?
Yeah. So typically we'll provide either an activity or suggest some type of environmental modification or adaptation that may be helpful for the child to meet their goal if it's incorporated into their daily routine. Other times we'll ask a question. Maybe we saw something during the session that sparked an idea in us and we want to gather some more information before we make a recommendation. And so we'll also use that to ask questions of the parents to try to get some additional feedback.
Yeah, so I think that probably covers most of our documentation flow. And I would say the last...
Who knew that we could talk about documentation for so long?
I did. I'm an OTA professor. Of course I can. I have a whole lecture on it, but this is not that. I think probably the last big thing that impacts us working together from a professional standpoint, really is supervision.
Yeah.
And again, looking at your own state practice laws is the most important thing when it comes to supervision. And so for us, we need to have on-site supervision as well as general supervision. And so for our on-site supervision, it's nice because I get a chance to come and see the families. They're often like, oh, hi, how's it going? Because they haven't seen me in a week or so. And it gives me just a chance again to check in. Now, sometimes I have an opportunity to be going ahead and I'm filling out the supervision log for that week. When I'm there, I'm filling out any performance review information while I'm there. And it gives me an opportunity really to step back because I'm not treating. I'm there as a supervisor. And so I get to kind of look at the whole picture when I'm there. I also get to be an extra hands on deck. So a lot of times that's nice for Ryan is to be able to have an extra set of hands in place. So whenever we're having a new client, having a first session, make sure that I can come in for a supervision visit. And then just following our state practice act regarding frequency of supervision as far as on-site and general supervision.
I'm pausing for a minute to mull it over. We're not talking about personal yet, but we are both very tired. But it is nice. It does require, and I guess with personal, we'll get into that a little bit, but it does require a bit of additional planning and additional financial commitment in terms of childcare. But I think I'm grateful to have you as a supervisor. You're really a wealth of knowledge, and if you weren't a joy to be around for me, then I wouldn't have married you.
Well, I think that's probably a good segue into the blending of like professional and personal, because in a supervisory role, right, that's a very professional role, and to be supervising your husband or your wife in that situation, right, you have to maintain your professional persona, essentially, to do that job and to provide constructive, helpful feedback. And for us, it's really important because this is our business and we need to be at the top of our game. So being able to give and take feedback in a professional role is part of the process. But we also recognize that we have a personal relationship together. And Ryan was just touching on it. There's logistics involved. There's our children involved. And I think this is probably a good time just to jump into maybe some of that personal side of things of what it's like working with your spouse or owning a business together and, you know, how you could maybe work with family members. Because I think when you work with aquatics or with animals, there's a lot more involved than just getting up and going to work at the clinic and coming home. And whether that's feeding the horses at home, if you're working with horses and you got horses at home, like somebody's got to feed them. And chances are that's going to be your family, whether they're officially on your payroll or not. And so there may be certain things that you need done with the horses or the pool cared for in a certain way that you have to communicate to your spouse or to your kids, because that's still part of that professional side of what you're providing. And so even if you're maybe not in the same role that we are as OTR and OTA, still, I think a lot of times when you are in a more unique setting, family does get involved in ways that maybe aren't the same when you're just working. And if we want to reflect back anciently, if we want to go into the vault here a million years ago, when I was at a center and I was incorporating hippotherapy, Ryan volunteered and was a sidewalker on occasion.
Yep. And I mucked stalls for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think there was a lot of, you know, looking way back when, as far as family members being involved, you weren't involved professionally, but you were involved in just supporting that part of my career.
Yeah. Well, and it's always funny because when I tell people that we work together, they always give me a sideways look and they're like, you work with your wife? Like, don't you guys want to just strangle each other? And but no, it's not like that at all. Like I definitely, so for me, it's knowing when I'm out of my depth, if there's something that I'm like, all right, I don't know the answer to this, I have absolutely no problem turning to you and asking the question. And likewise, I there's been plenty of times where you turn to me and said, okay, I'm working with so-and-so today. What do you think? What do you think would be a good idea? And we can kind of brainstorm together.
I think it really helps to fight the burnout and the isolation that can come with it being in using hippotherapy or aquatics, where you might be the only therapist or the only OT at a pool,
yeah,
or the only OT at a therapeutic riding center. And you, like, you have nobody to bounce ideas off of. Like, you, but we have that built in. Like, we just like, hey, we're having lunch and I got to go treat later this afternoon. Like, what do you think?
Yeah. And I think that's the part that I love about having students, because it's just a fresh set of eyes, you know, and I don't know, so many times I look at our practice settings and I think back to when I was in school and I was like, man, when I graduate, like, I initially intended to go work in a SNF, or I pictured myself in geriatrics, which was really funny because something like 80 to 90% of my classmates all said pediatrics in that first semester. And by the end of the pediatrics semester, they were, nope, I'm not doing that. And but I was like, meh, I kind of liked it. And
yeah, you had a really good pediatric placement too.
Yeah, but you know, having that fresh set of eyes, right? Because I do think that we can, it's not necessarily jaded, but we kind of get into our routines and we get into, this is the way that we do things and
this is what this client is capable of.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and so you can become kind of belt fed that way, where you're just kind of one track, and having a fresh set of eyes, because I don't see your clients at the same frequency as you. So even though I'm familiar with some of them and I've worked with some of them, and so I have an idea of what they're like and what their interests are and what their goals are, I can sometimes offer a little bit of outside the box insight and vice versa.
Yeah. And I mean, we pretty much live, eat and breathe OT. I think it probably it takes up enough time that our daughter, who is six, it has now started to come up with interventions and ideas. She'd be like, oh, I have a great idea, mommy. Or she's created a game. One day she came down with a game that she had made with, like,
poor kids.
Yeah, they have no chance at all whatsoever. She came down with a game. She's like, oh, I think this would be a great game for your clients. And she had cut up like pieces of paper and matched like colored circles.
That's the other thing is we have an intervention closet, and our children love to raid it. And they're, you know, making breakfast and turn around and they're like, hey, what's this? And they're pulling out like a sensory bin with sand or rice, or it's like, oh, no. Please.
And the giant bag of pom-poms the other day. But our kids also get the benefit of, like, we have what we call the tiny house, which is really kind of like a very small clinic. So it's got a swing and a trampoline and a therapy ball and, you know, pretend play stuff. And then upstairs is kind of a cross between our homeschool space and more fine motor art types of stuff. So they get the benefit, I think, of it too, but they're immersed in it, because we'll be discussing sensory concepts at breakfast or reflex integration at lunch or aquatic and hippotherapy techniques at dinner, or sometimes we have to stop ourselves and be like, okay, let's not talk OT.
Yeah. But it's nice when you come across something or you hear about something that you're really excited about. And I think that's one of the other things, is any of the crazy ideas that pop into my head that I'm like, hey, this would be a real, like, I want to do a program for, I don't know, the fly fishing one that I really wanted to get started. But I was able to talk it out with you, and you're like, yeah, I think you got something there. It's just, I think, a matter of dialing in the right demographic, but don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but
that's its own podcast episode.
Yeah. But it's nice to, when I have these ideas or these things that can kind of stir up a passion for the profession in me, to have somebody to share that with and talk about it with.
Yeah. And I think supporting one another is really important. If we have an interest area that we want to get more continuing education in, or one of us is going to conference, like, we're there to support one another and say, like, yeah, I really think you should take that continuing education course or go to that conference. and that, again, that built-in support system with somebody who really gets it. If you're a horse person, you can talk horses all day long, and we certainly can talk OT all day long.
Although our continuing ed budget is probably bonkers for what it should be. And I think that's maybe in the, we can put that in the deficit column of working with your spouse, that it's hard to say no to each other when we know we're really passionate about learning about something. And I guess continuing ed is always money well spent.
Yeah, I think, again, it just be a very immersive experience, I would say. And we've been trying to kind of come up with some workflows to allow us to put the hat on and take the hat off, I think, a little bit. And so we've implemented our Monday swimming meetings, our swimming business meetings. And so I guess as a husband-wife team, that's something that's been working really well, is that
the morning we take the kids to childcare, drop them off, and we get usually a couple of hours of peace and quiet where we can really focus on the business and discuss, either troubleshoot some of the issues that we're dealing with or talk about visions that we may have about where we could go or what we could do if we wanted to run like a short-term program. Say we wanted to run like an eight-week enrichment program, that's a good time for us to hash it out and discuss it.
Yeah, and it gives us a real clear way of, we know that we're meeting, we know that we're going to have kind of accountability. So like, what are you going to do? What am I going to do? Who needs to do what? As far as whether that's running an ad or answering potential clients back or putting together information, we have that time to hash it out. And anybody who has small, young children know that as soon as you get into kind of a conversation that's taking your focus away from them, often they're clamoring about you with a mommy, daddy, whatever, that they need to connect with you and they need your attention. And so we found that we're recording this podcast at 10:30 at night. And so this is not a great time for us to be doing a business meeting. We're both pretty tired. Ryan worked as a lifeguard this morning at 5 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I've seen clients today. So, you know, we're both pretty tired by this point in the day. So we found that after getting the kids to bed was not a good time to do a business meeting. We just felt tired, grumpy about it, and it wasn't productive. So our swimming meetings are very relaxing. They're a chance for us to really, you know, connect. And I would say that there's...
And actually engage. Yeah. You know, like how many businesses where they're like, hey, we're going to have a company Zoom meeting tonight. And it's like, oh, God, no. I have people that I know that were, you know, that complain about that. And
so it's like the most OT of meetings we could come up with, because there's like the sensory aspect of the water. There's the relaxation. It's, oh, I can move and I can get my sensory needs met and I can brainstorm and we can like... Then we can go sit in the sauna for a little bit. So from a personal point of view, it's a great way to have business meetings. And it really sets our week off on like on a good start, because then we have our plan for the week. And then we know that we're catching back up. So I'm not exactly sure how we're going to adjust this when I start school, but
we'll figure it out.
Have to move it to Tuesday.
So Gina is much more scheduled. And I would say, talking about personal and professional, like, we know each other in ways that, you know, nobody else knows us. And I know that she is the organized one. She likes charts and
Virgo
lists. And I, you know, I'm definitely a much more fly by the seat of my pants type guy. Although I do recognize the value and importance of lists and being organized and all that. But you are definitely much better at that. So I will usually defer to you with things like that. Pattern of life. So, you know, we know, for example, when business meetings are going to be the most productive for the two of us. And we have that as a benefit that we can work that out and discuss it and find something that works for us.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be, you know, during the day or in an office. And that is a great benefit. I think probably the one thing that you touched on but skimmed over was the childcare aspect. And when you work with your spouse and you have children together, anytime you want to do anything together professionally, you need to find childcare. And I think I'll just kind of speak as put the mom hat on. That's probably been one of the most stressful things for me of all is finding reliable childcare because I feel immense pressure to provide for our clients if I have a scheduled session and now my child has a cold or a fever, and it's like you can't have a babysitter come when your kid is sick. And so then it would mean like not going and doing the sessions. And I'm sure other people experience this too when their child is sick and just not being able to find childcare. But whenever we need to do something together, so that can be supervision visits, like we talked about our evaluations, it could be our business meetings, like anything that we need to do together, we need to find childcare. And we have our primary babysitter, we have a backup babysitter, we have support from those situations, but our primary babysitter is away on vacation in Florida right now. And so, getting a secondary in, and it's just it to me that is a huge stressor, as opposed to if you and your partner work at different businesses or, you have different employers. You may be able to work out your childcare differently. But I would also say on the flip side is we own our own business, so we can be really flexible in how we schedule our sessions to deconflict them as much as possible in that, we're not going to schedule treatment at the same time. And then that does allow for supervision visits. It does allow for consultation. It does allow for, in some cases, filling in depending on the client. Especially for like our nature-based sessions at the park, sometimes we can fill in for one another.
Or if they're interested in one of the other settings that we have.
Yeah. So I think those are all probably part of that. Our physical space of working together, we have a office in our basement, and this year we got real desks. We still haven't got real office chairs, but we have real desks. And
We just need a wide enough space where we can both sit in front of the camera for podcasting purposes. We've got to sort that out.
but Ryan made me an excellent backdrop this year to, again, that part of that like supportive thing. So he was able to make a really cool backdrop. So if you see any of our YouTube videos, you'll see the really nice, very natural backdrop that he made. And it was just a really nice, he's just like, just trust me. Like, if you trust me, let me do it. I was like, okay, fine. And I've gotten a lot of compliments about the background. And so that was a little project that he did for me that was really meaningful. And even if I'm just sitting here at my desk working and he's right beside me, or he's working and I'm hanging out here doing something on my laptop, not only do we work together, not only do we own the business and all that too, like our desks are literally, I don't know, 2 feet apart. So we spend a lot of quality time together, I would say. And I think that fits pretty much with a vision that we had for our family, is that we're a homeschooling family. So not only do we spend a lot of time with each other, but we spend a lot of time with our kids. And because they're not going off to school, so we're home together, we're home with them. But it gives us immense flexibility in picking a random Wednesday and being like, oh, let's go over to Crayola Factory, or let's go swimming, or take a hike.
But the flip side of that is, being an entrepreneur, owning your own business is very challenging. It's not for the faint of heart. It's really about how much struggle can you take is.
Well, and I think you have a lot more experience there than I do. That's the entrepreneurship is definitely an area where you've had kind of the ups and downs a lot more. And so sometimes I feel like when I'm getting stressed, overwhelmed, anxious about it, you can say like, hey, it's part and parcel of
It
running your
boils
own
down,
business.
I think it boils down to grit. And typically, when you're running a small business, you're not really going to see any profit for the first 2 years. That's just fact of life. If you do, great, but you shouldn't count on it. And I think most small businesses really get to be profitable by about year five, is statistically, at last I heard.
Well, and I think to me, that's always a bit of a failing of our education system for clinicians, is that we get no, zero, zip, zilch, like business, private practice training, entrepreneurship training. Yeah. And a lot of OTs do want to go into something maybe a little bit different than clinical practice, or even just adding in some nature-based sessions or some animal-assisted therapy or aquatic therapy outside of your full-time job. There hasn't been a lot of resources. You're not coming out of school with even at just a very, very basic understanding of how to do it on your own.
Well, and again, I don't think anybody gets into this profession if they're not passionate about it in one way or another. And that may be, you may just want to get into it and work in a SNF or in a sensory clinic or any of the traditional clinical settings. You may want to go to work for somebody else, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But if you feel a strong drive to explore something that is maybe being underserved in the community, so you have an idea for something that you think would really be able to help a lot of people, you should be able to chase that. And
I think you see that in some niches like lactation consultant, OTs who are working in pelvic health or women's health. So there are other niches like this outside of animals and aquatics, but
there's that one Coda that we listened to a podcast, I think about a year ago, where she was I'm trying to remember what the actual term was, but she was working in, I think, an assisted living facility, and she started having some older clients asking about sexual relations. And so she started a side gig as a sexual relations consultant and helping them navigate that in older age. And I thought that was really interesting how she found that niche and was able to capitalize on it and contracted out an OTR to supervise and help her do the evaluations and write up the treatment plans and, take care of all the OTR stuff. And so she could get down to the real business of coding. But you can do, and I think about the one professor that I had, don't want to name him, but would say, the world is your oyster. Whatever it is that you want to do in this profession, you can do, because it really is across the lifespan. It's
anything that occupies your time, right, is your occupation.
Well,
so
I jumped into this profession because you came home and you were talking about the mental health semester for, I was like, wait a second. Mental, I thought you just worked with kids. And then I really started looking into what OT was, and I saw all the different things and opportunities and that's kind of the way I am, is I get really excited about something, and then it's not like ADHD, but I see so many things that interest me that it's sometimes hard to nail down, like, all right, this is what I really want to do. And that's one of the reasons why I love OT, is that it really opens up that door to chase whatever passion you may have at the moment. You can follow that, and you can find a way to use that to help the people that need it.
Well, and I think that's kind of one of my long running jokes, is that when I got too old to incorporate hippotherapy and walk all those miles every day and physically help clients be safe on the horse, that I would switch to mental health and I'd still be able to incorporate the horses in, but that I wouldn't have the physical demands as well. So, I mean, sneak peek preview that we're going to have an episode coming up on horses and mental health, but that is part of the beauty of our profession, is that there's a lot of specialty. You can kind of make a specialty area in a lot of different ways. So I think as we kind of come to wrap up today, we've touched on the professional aspect of how we work together in the role of the OTR and the role of the OTA. And then we've touched a little bit on that personal side of things, like what it's really like working together, working with your spouse, how you might be needing to rely on family members if you're working in a unique setting like animals and aquatics. And I think as we wrap up here, we just wanted to point out maybe some of the challenges that we faced and then some of the benefits that we've had in our particular circumstances.
Yeah, specific challenges, I would probably say it's hard because it's a challenge, but it's also a benefit, and that would be the scheduling. We have a 6-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 1-year-old, and making sure that we're meeting that responsibility as parents first and foremost, while also
growing our business,
yeah. and advancing professionally. And it is a lot to juggle, but again, we have that flexibility.
I would say maybe along with that is because we work together in the same business, it's the same boat. And so you're either floating or sinking together. And for other people listening, if your partner or your spouse has a stable job where you can count on their income every month and what's coming in, then you might be even almost more free to pursue a particular passion area or get started using hypnotherapy. Whereas for us,
This is what we got.
We got to make it work. And this is what we got coming in for income for the month. And there is no like rely on the other person's income that's coming in from like their employment position.
Trying to think of other weaknesses.
Well,
I think sometimes if we're ready to shut off with the, you know, one of us may be ready to shut off with the business and the other one is still going, that can be a challenge. So we may be on different wavelengths. We talked about the benefits of blending the personal and the professional, but I think one of the drawbacks is
turning it off
and switching from that professional role back to the personal role sometimes.
Yeah. Even sometimes with the best of intentions, I think, you know, date night. And then all of a sudden we find ourselves like talking about work or the business or a client or that is just, it just runs through our veins most of the time. And our benefits, we get to do something we're passionate about. We get to do it with someone we're passionate about. And you can't replace that. You can't replace having, you know, your life partner with you doing something you love and seeing them grow and excel and, you know, really find success in that. So I think that's definitely one of the huge benefits.
Yeah. And I think the encouragement that we give to each other and get from each other that's irreplaceable.
Yeah. So thanks for listening in today. We hope that this was helpful and gives you some insight into who we are, but also that role of OTR and OTA and how you might be incorporating any family members into your passion project if you're incorporating animals or aquatics into your OT sessions. And if you have any feedback on this episode, we'd certainly like to hear it. If this episode was helpful to you, go ahead and like and subscribe to the podcast. If you could leave us a review, that would really help other OTs find us. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.